Good morning and welcome to the Illinois University Board of Trustees full board meeting. I will call the meeting to order. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Clinton. Curtis.
Present.
Gilbert.
Present.
Hightower.
Present.
Sharma.
Present.
Simmons.
Present.
Tedrick.
Present.
Walters.
Present.
A quorum is established.
Okay, for the meeting, this morning's meeting, we're having kind of a hybrid format for today's meeting. Because it's prudent, we're still under the ongoing disaster proclamation for public health concerns from the governor. So we have two of our trustees that are appearing by Zoom, and the rest are present. Luke, I don't know if there's anything you wish to add about the, where are you, Luke? Oh, there you are. About the proclamation and our ability to do this hybrid board meeting.
Yes, similar. Good morning, everyone. Similar to the meetings that we've had for the last 2 years, under the Open Meetings Act, when there's a declaration or a proclamation of disaster like we've got in place now, it allows for a different format than might otherwise be required for in-person meetings that we normally have.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Hightower and Trustee Sharma, can you hear us okay?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
All right. I would like first to welcome Chancellor James Minor to his first board meeting. I would also like to welcome President Mahoney and Chancellor Lane for their first board meeting in person. President Mahoney started his job on March 1st of 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, and his first act was to close the university because of the pandemic. But anyway, this is the first time we've been in person, and I'd like to welcome them also. And also like to welcome Maddie Waters to her first board meeting in person. Seen you on Zoom, but glad you could join us here today. I would like now to move to the presentation of the Lyndall W. Sturgis Memorial Public Service Award. In 1979, the family of the late Lyndall W. Sturgis established an endowment to fund an award to recognize the contributions of an SIU Carbondale employee to his or her community, the area, state, or nation. Mr. Sturgis serves as a member of the Illinois Teachers College Board from 1941 to 1949, and then he served on the first SIU Board of Trustees after SIU attained university status in 1949, and was elected chair in 1969, and served in that role until his retirement from the board in 1971. The award carries a $1,000 cash prize, a plaque, and the recipient's name has been engraved and will be added to the Lyndall Sturgis Award perpetual plaque displayed in Anthony Hall. The recipient of this year's award, the recipients of this award distinguished themselves through their dedication to serve others. And the same is true of this year's recipient. We are pleased to honor Ms. Casey Parker, the 2022 Lyndall W. Sturgis Memorial Public Service Award recipient. Ms. Parker is coordinator for SIU Carbondale's Office of Equity and Compliance and a 3-degree SIU Carbondale alumna, including her law degree from SIU School of Law. When she's not working, she's a volunteering. Her many volunteer efforts include more than 15 years with the Humane Society of Southern Illinois Board, where she is president. She is president of the Rotary Club of Jackson and Williamson Counties, Sunset, an active volunteer with the SIU School of Law, including as a moot court judge and a faculty advisor to the Delta Zeta Sorority on campus. Some of Ms. Parker's prior volunteer work includes the Carbondale Crime Stoppers Board, the court-appointed special advocates known as CASA of Williamson County. In addition, she is working to start a 100 Women Who Caregiving Circle in Jackson County through the Southern Illinois Community Foundation. 100 women get together 3 times a year, with each donating $100 per meeting. Local charities or local branches of the national charity will then make presentations and the group decides which charity receives $10,000 per meeting. Ms. Parker's altruism goes back to when she was a child, volunteering with her grandparents. She says volunteering is, quote, part of the fabric of who I am, unquote. She goes on to say, quote, I want to be involved and I want to make my community better, especially for those who I feel are the most vulnerable. That's my motivation, end quote. Please join me in graduating the recipient of the 2022 Lyndall W. Sturgis Memorial Public Service Award, Ms. Casey Parker. Ms. Parker's accomplishments were celebrated at a breakfast here at the Student Center this morning. Ms. Pam Pfeiffer, the granddaughter of Lyndall Sturgis, and her husband Phil were also able to attend the breakfast. Now I would like for Casey, you to come and receive your award. Dr. Mahoney and Dr. Lane, will you join us here? Rusty, where are you? There you are for the photo. Next, I would like to present a certificate to student trustee Maddie Waters, the SIU Edwardsville, for her service on the board. As this is your last and final regular scheduled board meeting, Maddie, we thank you for your efforts on behalf of the students and wish you the best in the future. Can you come up here and join us for a photo? The SIU Carbondale trustee, Shaylee Clinton, could not be present with us today, and we will get her certificate to her later. The next item on the agenda is an update on the Institute for Rural Health. President Mahoney, will you introduce this item?
Yes, at our last board meeting, we had an update on the Office of Community Engagement. And as you know, back in July, we approved both the Office of Community Engagement and the Institute for Rural Health. And so we thought it was appropriate to also provide now an update on the Institute for Rural Health. So I'm pleased to introduce Jeff Franklin, who's the interim director of the Institute for Rural Health, to give an update on the progress they've made during the past several months.
Oh, yeah. Hold a second. Before you do that, Jeff, I forgot to recognize the past Lyndall Sturgis Memorial Public Service recipients, and I think they're over here. I know there's a few of them there. Will you please stand and be recognized? Thank you. Okay, Jeff.
Good morning. Well, thank you. Well, it's a pleasure to be here today to talk a little bit about our Center for Rural Health and give you an update on the Institute for Rural Health.
Can you kind of speak up a little bit?
I'm sorry. Two things that I'm really excited about and feel very passionate about. And talking about the center as well, it gives us an opportunity to recognize and celebrate an incredible team that's doing some incredible work. So here you can see some of the objectives of the center. But for us, it's really about equity and looking at what are those barriers that are preventing people to get to equity, and what does the infrastructure look like? What can we do? How can we work with a community and help them address some of those needs that are identified and move forward and improve health outcomes and delivery. So the Center for Rural Health, we are an IBHE accredited center. We're under the School of Medicine and in under external relations. So we are growing. The center has been growing tremendously. I joined in 2010, and we look nothing like we did at that point. You can see here we have our staff listed, and we're still adding staff. We have so much work, and I mean, it's fantastic that the state and other agencies think about SIU and think about the center when they need assistance working on something. And you'll see that we have students. You know, I'm an educator by heart, so students are really important. So we always have graduate students that are there, they're involved, and they're working. And it's my goal that when they leave their time at the center, that we've given them roots and wings, is what we always tell them. So when I talk about growth, not just in programming, but in our footprint. So, you know, at one time we were just here on Carbondale campus, but now we have regional offices in Canton and in Alney, and our newest office is in Dixon, and that's quite a haul. And I was teasing Dr. Cruz that I need a passport to go to Dixon because it was quite a drive, but it's going to be exciting. So now a lot of what we do is statewide, but now we're going to really be covering I-80 South. So that's just fantastic for us. So in our IBHE report for FY21, this is us at a glance. You know, so it was COVID time and everything was just so different and we were functioning differently and remote. And I think we even surprised ourselves at what we were able to accomplish. So, you know, thinking about, okay, what do we think we can generate externally, you know, funding? And we thought, okay, maybe 500,000. But we were at 2.5 million for FY21, a little over 3 million for 22, and we're set to be about 3 million for 23 as well. And what we know in rural areas, so you see a lot about community collaborations. Nothing gets done in rural if we're not focused on building those relationships and building trust, and then being able to leverage those resources and partnerships. Partnerships and the relationships take time, but spending that time doing it, building those relationships is really important. And it's something our team does really well. So getting to equity, that is really what I think our ultimate goal is. What do our communities need? There is such need and such disparity in rural areas. And so there's so much to do. So I'm gonna run through a couple, just list our projects. I wanna highlight a couple, but at any time I'm happy to have more conversation, you know, and discuss any of these further. We have recently become a rural leadership center for the state around opioid use disorders. So that's really exciting for us. We do a lot of work with workforce, pipeline, career. You know, I spent many years in elementary school classroom. So our Delta States grant, which we've held since 2002, is dealing with disparities in the Mississippi Delta. So for us, that's 16 counties. So we have a school-based program and really looking at creating cultures of wellness and schools and policy. And with that one, before I became the director of the center, I was the director of the Delta. And HRSA, or the Federal Office of Rural Health, always said that SIU was the best steward of the money. And we did the most, we had the most regional impact. So, you know, that's always good to hear. Farm Family Resource Initiative, I'll talk about that in just a second. So, thanks to the work of Senator Scott Bennett and Department of Ag Director Jerry Costello, we were approached to create a farm family network, if you will, to help farm families deal with some of the mental health issues that they might be having. Our first year was just a pilot in, you know, six counties, mid-state. Next, the second year, they doubled our money and asked us to go statewide. So we have a 24/7 hotline that farm families can call, text, email. We'll get them help. We're able to provide counseling sessions through psychiatry. But we're also working with the families that if, you know, if we're talking about building capacity, helping families recognize when somebody might be in crisis and when we can get them help. This is just a tremendous program and having such impact statewide. So there's a lot of work done around or providers that are doing medically assisted recovery for opioid use disorders. We're working to add a mobile component to that. So when we look at community health needs assessments that are done, what communities are saying is they want to see more localized delivery of services and resources, like at the neighborhood level. So if we take a provider that's, or work with a provider who's providing this medically assisted recovery, and we equip a mobile unit with a telehealth platform, and we can go into the communities and work with them to provide this needed recovery assistance. And that's, you know, it's localizing that delivery. It's getting us to equity. And this one I'm really excited about because I think it has implications for the Institute as well. I feel like we're cutting our teeth on this one. So we have created a certification and apprenticeship program for certified recovery support specialists. This is someone who has lived experience and that can be a part of a care team. And the certification side of, you know, they can go through, they can see both sides. So they have the lived experience, but then they can see the, you know, the other side, you know, the hospital side, if you will. So we will start this program in the fall. And I mean, it's been a real learning experience. There's been a lot that goes into this, creating the certification program. But I know that's a direction that I would like to see the Institute go, that we're creating more educational opportunities, that we have more certification programs, you know, that maybe someone isn't necessarily looking for a degree, but we can still see the community in our workforce and, you know, maybe doing that through some certification programs. So the Institute, you know, having watched and been a part of the growth of the center and having the opportunity to help shape the Institute, you know, looking at the center, we've learned a lot, and I think we're going to see great things come out of the Institute. And you can see some of the goals, they're similar. They're around capacity. You know, are we going to address equity? Are we going to build capacity of the communities? Are we going to, can we transfer that capacity to the community so then it becomes something sustainable? And then, you know, we're addressing disparities. And we're doing this all through like a policy systems and environmental change lens and the DEI lens as well. So right now, in the process of getting all the paperwork finished for, you know, submitting for temporary status, just about have the advisory boards, internal and external, fully formed. I'd like to meet in the summer with them. And really looking, and when we meet, I want to be able to take something to them. And so, you know, hospital systems do community health needs assessments. And I've had some grad students looking at the community health needs assessments all around the state. You know, what are we seeing as some of the trends? Now, I've been a part of a lot of those needs assessments and a lot of the process. But I want to look at what are we seeing as priorities? What are we looking at as trends? Can we, you know, do some future forecasting? And then where can we come in as an institute or as a system and help address some of those things that we're seeing? And I've said that I've said yes to so many things lately, but really getting out there and building those relationships. And two things have come from that. You know, the relationship side of thing is really that rural cultural competence. So looking at external funding, I did apply under the center for one. It was a workforce grant that we did with SIH and SI Now, and it was not funded, but we'll keep trying. I'm so excited that we did get $10 million in capital funds, so that's exciting to hear, but not the operational side. But we have applied for $1.8 million in operational funds, and which will do a lot to move us forward, because right now any operational expenses for the Office of Community Engagement, because Stacy Grundy is also a center staff person, I cover out of the center. So it'll be nice to have some additional funds, but the work is so similar. So two things that have popped up that, sometimes when low-hanging fruit just is there, you need to just run with it. So Liesl Wingert, who's our person that works in our office in Alney, has been working with the court system for a long time. This is her area. She does drug endangered children training. She's on a national advisory board for that. She's been working with the mental health task force and doing some strategic planning workshops. So the relationships that she's built over the last few years with the new Pretrial Services Act, they approached her and said, we could probably use some help with this when we look at the workforce needs and service needs in rural areas. So we took that. I've had conversations with faculty on both campuses, and I think we're going to be able to move forward and look. Maybe it's a certification program, maybe it's professional development. I'm not sure what all it's going to look like, but that's something that just came up. So through the relationships. So this next one, it's an idea that I've had, that I had lots of conversations with school administrators and with SIH, really about pipeline, career exploration. So I'm on a advisory board for the Federal Office of Rural Health Policy, and we help shape the technical assistance that's provided to HRSA grantees. My counterpart in Arkansas was sharing a website that she has, that if someone is interested in a particular career, in high school age or just in the community, they click on it, and it is someone local in that community that tells all about that career. So I've had conversations with faculty on both campuses again to what could that look like for us? What would the SIU piece look like when it comes in? So if you're interested in this and this particular field, but maybe it's too overwhelming to get more information on the education side of things, that we can come in and have something that's there as well. So our marketing department, which is just fantastic, like a lot of us, capacity, a lot to do, not enough time, not enough people. So to get this up and running, and this is something that SIH is really involved in, SI Now wants to be involved in, school administrators love the idea of what this could look like. So out of the center, I'm going to fund some graduate students from WSIU, and they're going to do the video production and help move this forward. But it's something that has been a desire or a need for a long time from a lot of our partners, and it just now seemed like the right time to move forward with that. I'm excited about what the Institute's going to look like in 4 to 5 years when we think about the growth. And I think we're going to see all of these impacts. And I think we're going to see improvements in health and delivery. I think recruitment and retention issues, that we're bringing forward, some educational opportunities. But then also being in the community and trying to keep people local and rural, and that you can have a satisfying, successful career. So that's very quickly the center and the Institute.
Anybody have any questions of Jess? You know, I can't think of a more exciting initiative that this university system has been involved in than this Institute for Rural Health, which is still in its infancy and still growing. But the benefit not only for our students who are going to participate in it, but more importantly, for the population it's going to be serving, providing access to not only the physical, but the mental health of underserved areas in this state. It's just and this actually, this institute too could be a model that goes nationwide that other universities pick up and follow. This is just a really exciting time for mm-hmm. this university to be involved in this project. I don't know, President Mahoney, if you want to add anything. I know, Trustee Tedrick, you've been very involved in pushing this. If there's anything anybody wants to say or questions of Jeff. Yes, Trustee.
Jeff, very impressive, and I'm 100% supportive of this Institute for Rural Health. You talked a lot about the farm family program, substance abuse, but you spent a lot of time on pipeline. And I understand you're an educator, and I understand that's what our university does, but I just caution you with make sure that the major focus of our effort is on improving health mm-hmm. and rural health. And so is that really where you're going, or is it going to have a lot more focus on pipeline? Everybody needs workforce, and everybody's working on pipeline in all these communities, but that's a small component in my mind. It's really mm-hmm. about how do we connect the social determinants of health,
right.
work with these communities that have developed community needs assessment, mm-hmm. and more importantly, their implementation plans, mm-hmm. and making sure, and I saw you had one line in there about connecting to the social determinants of mm-hmm. health, but if people don't have food sustainability and right. permanency of housing and a job, it's hard for us in medicine to make an impact on improving their health. And there's so much need in Central and Southern Illinois. So I commend you. I love what you're doing, but really a lot more focus on
that
part of it.
Thank you for that. And we do work a lot with the social determinants. I mean, that is really looking at what are those barriers to improved health, healthcare delivery, equity that are there because of social determinants of health. And you know we're part of the process, we're part of the implementation plans all around the state, and it's nice to see that even for us locally here that we're starting to look at this at social determinants of health as an identified health priority in itself, which is really exciting to see.
A lot of times people in rural communities are afraid to reach out to the big buildings, the big systems. They don't feel worthy, and so we got to get to them, and I think mm-hmm. Another area of focus.
Yeah, and you know what we can do too, and we do it through farm family, we do it through school health as well when we think about improving the whole child or the whole community, whole school, that mental health is just as important. But stigma seems to be intensified in rural areas. So anything that we can do to help open the conversation and address stigma, I think that's going to take us a long way to helping people get to some mental health resources.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Jeff, appreciate your presentation today, and just a quick statement that this board is very much behind you. We know it's important, and it can be something that our system can be proud of, so keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, next we will close the meeting to go into executive session. I move to close the meeting to the public for the purpose of considering pending, probable, or imminent court proceedings against or on behalf of the board, appointment, employment, and compensation, discipline, performance, or dismissal of specific employees, and review of executive session minutes, the relevant sections of the Open Meetings Act statute that allow for closed sections. The closed session are 5 ILCS 120/2 (c)(1), (11), and (21). Do I hear a second to the motion?
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Ms. Whittington, please call the roll.
Curtis?
Yes.
Gilbert?
Yes.
Hightower?
Yes.
Sharma?
Yes.
Simmons?
Yes.
Tedrick? And Walters?
Yes.
We are going to move into ballroom A for closed session, and then hopefully we'll be back here in hopefully a half hour, 45 minutes. Continuation of the board meeting.
Yes.
No, no pressure there.
recording now. Let's see, profile. I should probably change my image too. My image is a picture of my beehives. Do you think I should get rid of that? Is that too?
I think it's fine.
Okay, cool.
All right, so I feel. So I'm gonna start. Are you going to still be coming in? Yours is on mute, right?
I have everything.
Okay, the full board is back in open session, and we will now recess and reconvene at the conclusion of the board's committee meetings. The first committee meeting today is the Academic Matters Committee. Dr. Hightower, are you here? Around?
I am here.
Okay. Will you proceed?
Thank you, sir. The meeting of the Academic Matters Committee is now in session. Announcements, Vice President Gupcha.
Thank you, Dr. Hightower. As I've mentioned in the past, we're proud of the efforts of all our faculty, staff, and students in the SIU system. Today, I would like to highlight the efforts of Christy McIntyre from SIUC and Natasha Flowers from SIUE. They are leading the efforts of the SIU system in the Illinois Tutoring Initiative, being spearheaded by the Illinois Board of Higher Education and the Illinois State Board of Education. This initiative will work with 8 school districts initially and 15 districts by the end of next fiscal year. This initiative is designed so that participating school districts will identify students in need, the areas in which they need tutoring in literacy or mathematics, and the format, either individual or small group. Eligible students whose education has suffered during the COVID pandemic will participate primarily in face-to-face tutoring sessions for at least 3 hours per week over a period of 8 weeks to the entire semester. At a later date, we will request Drs. McIntyre and Flowers to present to the Board of Trustees. Drs. McIntyre and Flowers also serve as the SIU representatives on the IBHE Early Childhood Access Consortium for Equity. The main aim of the consortium is to streamline, coordinate, and improve accessibility of degree completion pathways for incumbent early childhood workforce employers. What they are doing here is at the core of equity and future prosperity. For as Confucius said, if you want to plan for 1 year, plant rice. If you want to plan for 10 years, plant trees. But if you want to plan for 100 years, educate children. I'm very pleased to tell you what they're doing. Those are my announcements, Chair Hightower.
Thank you, Vice President. Is there a motion to approve the minutes for the meeting held on February 10th, 2022?
So moved.